You have people tweeting at players, hey man, I bet such and such on you. How dare you?
If you tweet a professional athlete that they didn't score enough points for your fantasy team, you are a loser. Yesterday, you were early. Last night, on time. Right now, you late. Welcome to You Late with Jazz and the Kais, ready to give you the rundown on last night and what's coming up. And if you've noticed by now, I am not Jasmine. I am Jared, the producer of You Late. So sorry to disappoint anybody who is looking forward to hearing Jasmine. You Late is presented by Buzzr, the hottest new app for watching the best moments in live sports. Download Buzzr in the App Store or wherever you get your apps and never miss the moment with Buzzr. Nikias is here. Nikias, how are you this morning?
I am doing well, not Jasmine. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. You know, entertaining game one of the NBA Finals last night, and I didn't quite expect that game to turn the way it did after what we saw through the first three quarters. And then Boston just went on two separate prolonged scoring runs in the fourth quarter, a 9-0 run early in the quarter and then a 17-0 run late in the quarter to kind of put the game out of reach. And that was all she wrote for game one.
Yeah, this a testament to Boston's defense, which after the first, I would say after the first 8 or 9 minutes of that game, because Steph Curry was absolutely losing his mind in the first quarter. That, the defense just kind of settled in for Boston. They were able to key in on some of Golden State's off-ball stuff, tighten up the switches on ball as well. So there weren't as many gaps for Golden State to attack. And it felt as the game went on, it just felt generally their half-court, Golden State's half-court offense became a little bit slower, took a little bit longer to get into what they wanted to get into, a few more late clock possessions for them. And so they have the splurge in the third quarter, but that was more so Boston missing shots and Golden State being able to push off of that. Once they got them in the half court, though, Golden State didn't have the same flow. And that takes us into the fourth quarter, where Jaylen Brown, first and foremost, 10 of his 24 points coming in the fourth. Jaylen Brown just knocked down a bunch of incredibly tough shots to keep Boston in it and to make an initial run early. And then the rest, then Al Horford checks in around these, I want to say the 6:34 mark. He checks in. The Warriors are up 101 to 100. This game ends with Boston up 120 to 108. Like, again, it just, the half-court offense just kind of ground to a halt for Golden State. And the threes that they were hitting early in the game, they just weren't falling anymore. Boston was able to get out in transition. And that's kind of how they wanted to juice their offense anyway. They were a fine half-court offense throughout the regular season. But they're at their best when their defense is able to force turnovers or get you late in the clock, defensive rebound, kick ahead. And now it's Tatum getting downhill. Now it's Jaylen Brown getting downhill. It's Marcus Smart getting downhill. And once you factor in the fact that the role guys that Golden State would be okay with letting shoot, your Derek Whites, your Marcus Smart, your Al Horford generally, I think that's probably going to change moving forward. But those are, you zoom out, the guys that Boston is okay with, Golden State is okay with. Okay, if they beat us, we just have to tip our cap. They hit the open stuff. You had Derek White hit some contested shots. I think you had the Al Horford three over a closing out Klay Thompson to give them the lead in the fourth quarter. They just hit the shots that they needed to. And so I think you're feeling fine if you're either team. For Golden State, Draymond alluded to it. He said they were dominant for the first 40, 42 minutes of the game. And then that last stretch happened. And I think that's mostly true, particularly that third quarter for Golden State. They did their thing. And for Boston, it's like, we survived a 21-point, 6-made-3 onslaught from Steph Curry, in which not only was he hitting tough shots, we also just lost him on a couple of those. Right. We just let him walk into transition threes because we failed to match up with the greatest shooter, one of the greatest offensive players, one of the greatest players of all time. We cleaned up the egregious stuff, and we got enough from our role guys. And we did so while Jason Tatum shot 3 of 17 from the field. We stole game one, got home court with Jason Tatum not having a great scoring night. And so I think both teams are kind of looking at it like, yeah, I think we're fine if we tighten some screws.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of framing it. You obviously laid it out there well, you know, from a Golden State perspective. If you're the Warriors, you look at what the Celtics did. They shot over 50% from the field, over 50% from three for the game. That's probably not going to happen again. Derek White's probably not going to go off for 21 again. Al Horford's not going to go on another one of these runs where he just doesn't miss. But then you look at it on the other side, like you said, and you know, Steph was, you know, 21 points in the first quarter, 6 of 7 from three. you know, Jason Tatum, he only had the 12 points, but he was still involved, like, especially later in the game with, you know, the 13 assists and whatnot. So it kind of made up for the fact that he was only 3 of 17 from the field. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into this more probably when we look ahead to game two, but I think I feel pretty good about this if I'm either team, which is weird to say off of a game one where it was the most lopsided fourth quarter point differential in NBA Finals history.
Yeah. And so, like, even from Golden State's perspective, it sucks that you lost that game, but you could also just kind of zoom out and say, yeah, it took literally the most lopsided quarter in NBA Finals history for us to lose this game. And so if the bar doesn't even have to be excellence from that perspective, it's just, if we are just simply below average in that fourth quarter, we probably still managed to win that game. And we have some things to work out heading into game two, but it's fine. It took that kind of onslaught. And so I just wonder who blinks first, because there were some like lineup things that were interesting. We talked about what Al Horford was able to do. A lot of that was with him at the five, with no Robert Williams on the floor. Grant Williams only played 16, 17 minutes or so. It was Marcus Smart and Derek White together. That's a pairing that I had question marks about earlier in the postseason. Like, hey, neither of these guys are trustworthy shooters, Smart more so than White. Can you play them together when your half-court offense can have some lulls and that gives them a help point? Those two playing together, you have the Jays and Al Horford, and that lineup, Golden State really couldn't figure out what they wanted to do with it. The defense was superb, just a lot more mobility. And offensively, with White, Smart, and Horford all making shots, that opened up the driving lanes for Jaylen Brown, that allowed Jason Tatum to get downhill. Again, he wasn't that effective as a scorer, but the passing was there. And what was also interesting in terms of Jason Tatum, just Golden State defended him a little bit differently than anticipated. As we've seen throughout this postseason run, teams have tried to hunt Jordan Poole on defense. They've tried to hunt Steph Curry on defense, which trying to hunt Steph seems futile at this point. He's had a good defensive year all year long. In the postseason, he's been great, period. No caveats, just great defensively. And so they would have Steph kind of show and then get back out to his man early in the postseason. In this game one, Golden State just says, all right, cool. We're just going to switch him. You can have the switch. Here's the matchup that you think you want. And so Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown will get the matchup. And then here comes Draymond Green sliding over behind that. And the help is later. The kickout's a little bit tougher. And now you're kicking to a Smart or a White or a Horford. But they have whoever's on the weak side taking away the best shooter of those two. And so it's just a little bit of a different look. We didn't see as many double teams as Jason Tatum saw during the regular season series between these two. So I wonder how much of that factored into Jason Tatum not having a good night as a scorer, because the looks were just different. And I think that gives Boston a little bit of optimism. Like, hey, if this is the look, I think we can get some more shots in his wheelhouse and he should be better moving forward.
What did you make of the fact that they were talking about it throughout the broadcast last night? The experience difference between the two teams in the finals, you know, Golden State going into the game had, you know, between all their players, 120 something NBA Finals games, Boston had zero. Yet when the game mattered the most in crunch time, Boston looked like the team that's been there a million times, and Golden State looked like the team that, you know, couldn't hit water if they fell out of a boat.
Like, I don't take much out of it. Like, I won't say that it doesn't matter when you have that kind of championship equity on Golden State's side. But as many people have pointed out, no, this Celtics group hasn't made the finals. But this Celtics group is very battle-tested, particularly the core. Smart, Tatum, Brown all together, I think they have been a part of the four conference finals in 6 years, this whole stretch. And so Al Horford was there, then he was gone, and now he's back again. And the role players all fit. And these are all tough defensive-minded groups. And I also just want to give a shout-out to M.A. Udoka, just the type of leadership that he provides. Beyond X's and O's stuff, because he has helped craft this ridiculous defense from a scheme perspective. And one of the first things he said in the opening season presser when he was hired was like, hey, this Boston team doesn't move the ball. We rate here in assist percentage. We rate here in assist per game. We rate here in these type of shots. I want to get the ball moving. And the first portion of the season for Boston was trying to iron out the kinks on what the offense is going to look like. And you saw it, particularly in the fourth quarter. You know, the main three is going to be a story. But from a process standpoint, it was a lot of drive and kick, force rotation. Here's an open three. And that kind of stuff was implemented early on from M.A. Udoka. So between the mindset that he's instilled in these guys, some of the scheme tweaks from this season that are now carrying over, that's where it's like all of that factors in for Boston. I don't think this moment – I never thought this moment was going to be too big for them.
Is the moment getting too big for Klay Thompson, or is he just not all the way back yet? Because he looks like a guy where, you know, he hit a couple big shots last night, you know, at various points, like when they were, you know, when Golden State was building out their lead in the third quarter. But for the most part, like, he was invisible in the fourth.
No, I don't think the moment's too big for him at all. Like, I think mostly for Klay, it's a combination of him not being the guy that he used to, just from, you have those multiple leg injuries, like, you're just not going to have the same quickness, not going to have the same movement skills, or just the quickness in which he, like, relocates around the perimeter, flies off screens and stuff. And that makes him a little bit easier to defend with how Boston switches all these off-ball actions. They flatten out those actions, and also they're physical with their switches, so you can't even get, like, as many backdoor cuts as you saw in, like, the first quarter. And so I think it's more so Klay couldn't really get open like that. And he made, I think he went 3 of 7 from three, which you look at it, I mean, it's 42, 43% clip from three. But, like, it didn't feel like any of those were super open looks. It was either he was just taking in the guy's space, or you got a strong closeout on those shots. And so I wonder if they're just okay with, oh, Klay, you're just going to have to be on a heater, or if they're going to actually try to design some looks to try to free him some. Because I think the guy that they're going to try to pinpoint off the ball, at least, would be Jaylen Brown. And Jaylen Brown had himself a good defensive night off the ball. And that was one of my concerns heading into this series. Would he be able to navigate some of the off-ball actions from Golden State? Because that's how they get you. One mistake, and now it's an open three. Or it's a slip to a big man, now he's throwing a lob to someone. Or someone's cutting from the corner, you get a layup that way. And so if you're locked in on all those off-ball actions, Klay's not beating you off the dribble. He was never that guy to begin with.
Right,
he had enough to get to the mid-range and knock down a shot over you, or he can post up a smaller guy. But he was never going to be the break you down, get all the way to the rim, get to the free throw line, or force a rotation and kick out guy. And so if you tighten that stuff up, no, I don't think it's Klay not being ready for the moment. It's more so just Boston is really freaking good on defense.
Yes.
And so he just didn't have the same cracks to attack.
Right, and obviously you've been talking for – you know, a few minutes now about how great Boston is on defense. And I'm just looking at this from a Golden State perspective. And I see Steph has a game where he's just lights out, insane in the first quarter. He finishes with 30 something points. You know, he looks like he's gunning for that first finals MVP. But I look at the rest of the roster and I'm kind of wondering where the rest of the offense is going to come from, especially on a night where, like, Jordan Poole wasn't very good. And, you know, Andrew Wiggins gave him 20 points, but they didn't really get much from anybody else.
And I think that's going to be your challenge for Golden State. And on the Wiggins point in particular, a lot of that came because Boston switched up the matchups from what we saw in the regular season series. What made their defense, part of the reason their defense was so great in 2022 was the shift with Robert Williams. It went from, hey, hang on this center, defend and pick and roll, to, hey, we're going to stash you on whoever the weakest offensive wing is on the other side. And so you can just stick around the paint and wreak havoc. And Golden State doesn't present a natural help point in that way, but they did put him on Andrew Wiggins in this one, which intrigued me. And Andrew Wiggins took a little minute to find his way, but then it's him being involved as a screener, him being involved as a cutter. And now you have Robert Williams trying to close out on the perimeter and trying to contain perimeter action. He's just working. And it was just a bit of a struggle there. And that's where a lot of the Andrew Wiggins openings came from. But once they were able to find the matchup for Rob Williams, and then later they just went away from him. Again, it was the Horford, the Jays, and then two guards line up to close out the game. Those openings weren't there. I think you have to look at Jordan Poole, because aside from Steph, he's the one true off-the-dribble threat that they have. A guy that you can just clear out of sight and say, all right, break this dude down, get downhill for us. And if he's going to have 9 points and shoot poorly while doing so, we know the kind of question marks that he has defensively. And so he has to, it feels like in a way, this is the series that he has to be your 18, 20, 22 point per game scorer in this series.
Yep.
Because otherwise, with Boston doing all the switching, being as physical as they are, showing help when necessary, if you can even remotely contain Steph, and again, 34 points, but 21 of those came in the first. If you can even remotely contain him, where does that creation come from? If you're not getting Steph just breaking everything, and Jordan Poole's the only other guy that can get to the rim, and if he's contained, I don't know where – it sounds dramatic to say I don't know where Golden State's half-court offense goes, but it just becomes a lot tougher for them to generate good stuff.
Well, it was an entertaining game one. It should be an entertaining game two. And with that, let's get into the buzzer beats. Shout out to the Buzzer Beats. Follow them on Twitter at Buzzer Beats. Subscribe to the newsletter. Listen to the podcast. Yes, kids, the email is still cool. Be sure to download the Buzzer app from the App Store or wherever you get your apps. It's 99 cents for the fourth quarter and overtime. And I mean, why beat around the bush? You know what we're looking forward to. It's game two of the NBA Finals on Sunday. Boston at Golden State. Boston is up 1-0 in the series. I already bet on the Celtics to win game two on the money line. I feel pretty good about that. So, well, no, I'm just straight betting it. I'm not like Jasmine. I'm not picking, you know, first baskets or, you know, will these three players all go off for 40 points or whatever crazy prop bet she does. So I'm looking forward to that. Also, if you're looking for something else to watch this weekend, maybe check out the hockey. You know, there's a little something for everybody. If you like high scoring offense, check out Edmonton, Colorado. If you like two goaltenders who are the best in the world at what they do, stand on their head, check out Tampa and the Rangers.
Want more defense? That seems like the ladder battle for you. Game two is going to be interesting. I love that Jasmine is not here and I still have to deal with betting content. That's beautiful.
Yes.
But obviously key in on that game two on Sunday. If you're looking for your basketball fix before game two, heavy WNBA slate on Friday. We have Liberty Mystics early. The Chicago Sky with Candace Parker, Courtney Vandersloot, Allie Quigley, all those talented ladies. And Ryan Howard, who is the early front runner for Rookie of the Year, one of the WNBA's best scorers already. That's a home game for Atlanta, also on the Atlanta front. Best court in the WNBA, bar none. Bar none, the court's beautiful. But anyway, those games are on from Friday. A weird no basketball day on Saturday. I don't know how I feel about that yet.
That's a little weird.
Yeah, and then a heavy W slate on Sunday, which all of those games end before game two starts. So if you want to get your basketball in early before flowing into the finals, the Wings are playing the Aces. The Sparks are playing the Mercury. The Sun are playing the Storm. The Mystics are playing the Sky. They had a really good battle earlier this regular season between Candace Parker and Elena Deledon, if you want to check that out. And if you want to watch some young teams play, Lynx Liberty early and the Indiana Fever and the Atlanta Dream play again. So a lot of basketball this weekend, even aside from the finals kicking back off on Sunday.
I'm just going to say it. I don't need any more daily updates on the Jock Peterson, Tommy Pham, Mike Trout, fantasy football controversy. Little backstory. I don't think there's any worse dude bro conversation than fantasy football bad beats. Oh, I can't believe that DeMarco Murray went off for 30 points against me and I lost by five, blah, 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 blah. I think it's just the worst conversations you can have and some of the worst content. And somehow this has become the biggest story in Major League Baseball this week, which I think says a lot about Major League Baseball and the how they managed to promote their own sport, that this is a big thing. I don't really care who's in the right or wrong between Jock Peterson and Tommy Pham. And I don't really care if Mike Trout is a bad fantasy football commissioner. Mike Trout, you know, Millville, New Jersey native, big Eagles fan. You know, I got nothing against Mike Trout, but, you know, he's got other priorities in life. He's got young children. I can understand if he's not paying attention to whatever dumb fantasy football commissioner thing he has to deal with.
I feel like it's not going to be my, I'm just going to say it, but like, just kind of to add on to your point, I feel like fantasy sports are just way, they're just too important at this point.
They're too important to some people.
Yeah. Like fantasy football is supposed to be a fun alternative, or fantasy sports period, just a fun alternative with your friends, help you stay engaged in the game in a different way. It has turned into this toxic mess of sorts to where you have people tweeting at players, hey man, I bet such and such on you, how dare you, I need you to go out there and get some buckets, or I need you to throw three touchdowns because I bet the family's grocery money on you. Like, what are we,
let's be clear, if you tweet a professional athlete that they didn't score enough points for your fantasy team, you are a loser.
Yes.
You are a effing loser and you deserve everything that you get.
It's just so odd, but I'm with you though. Like, the story was funny at first, or at least the initial shock of it was. I was like, wait, they're slapping people over fantasy football. This is a whole nother sport. What's happening here? And now then Jock is like showing reporters what the meme was.
He's got receipts.
Like, this has gotten too serious for me. And now we're getting, again, like you said, the Trout update, and it just keeps going. I was like, bro, listen, is it the season going on right now? Like, what are we talking about? What are we talking about right now? That's just odd. Whatever. I hope it gets sorted out, and I hope it's just done. Let's just move past this.
Right, I never want to hear about it again after today.
I think I'm good. Two things for me, and I'm just going to say it. One, very much here for WNBA expansion. Looks like that is coming soon. We are going to have, probably going to have the name of the cities that are getting teams by the end of this season, hopefully. The short list of teams that was listed in the Athletic article that dropped yesterday.
I read it, Portland, Philly, there were a couple other cities.
Toronto was in there, which is interesting to me. I didn't think Toronto seems primed to have one. I just didn't know how they were going to factor in. Like, I know with the NBA, basically Toronto's TV ratings just don't even factor into the NBA's calculus just because it's a whole nother country. So that's where I was kind of like, the WNBA wants to make this a profitable thing. So I wonder how much that's going to factor in. But if Toronto can get a team, that would be fun. Bring a team, bring this thing back to Charlotte. Like, I want Charlotte back, man. Just selfish, of course, but I think this medium is ready for it on that front. And just on a non-sports note, the boys are back. We just finished watching episode one this morning. Holy crap. If you don't have Amazon Prime, buy it. Ask your friends if they have it. Do something. Watch the boys. Season three is going to be a wild one if the first episode is any indication.
Borrow the password. Do that before they shut it down, like Netflix is trying
to. Yeah, get it in while you can.
You were late. Now you're caught up. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at You Late. You can follow me at Mr. Jared Moore. I am not Jasmine L. Watkins. So there will be no discussion on this podcast today about how Nancy Pelosi's tweet was the beginning of the end for the Warriors.
Oh, Jesus. Don't forget the L. Please follow Jared. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. And with that, we will catch y'all on Monday.
Adios.